It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. The poet Homer called the ocean a whale road. Some people in the town of Homer seem to have a similar inspiration. They're inaugurating a water trail on Kachemak Bay. The bay is already a center of activity of all kinds of marine activities, and Kachemak Bay State Park on the south side of the bay may be the best place in Alaska for self-guided trips off the road system, where you can paddle from trailhead to trailhead. On today's show, we'll be exploring the wonderful qualities of the area and learning about the Kachemak Bay Water Trail, which is about to have its grand opening soon. And I've got three guests with me from Homer, all on the telephone, because I'm in Anchorage as we're recording today's show. Mac O'Haggerty is well known for Macco's Water Taxi. He's also president of Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park and involved in a lot of other stuff. Thanks for being with us, Macco.
Happy to be here.
Dorothy Melambianakis is also with Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, super involved in work of protecting the bay. Thanks for being with us, Dorothy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Dave Brann is sort of the father of the Kachemak Bay Water Trail, co-chair of the steering committee that's been creating this new institution, this new thing. And Dave, I want to thank you for being with us. And we need to begin the show by explaining what a water trail is, because it's a concept that does not naturally spring to mind. I imagine a trail that somehow goes over the water, but that's not exactly what it is.
Well, not exactly, and thanks for the opportunity to be on the show and to enlighten people just a little bit about the water trail. Yeah, a water trail is basically a defined route on the water, but really what it does is identify all the places along a shoreline, whether it's a river or a lake or an ocean or a bay like Kachemak Bay, where people can go ashore and either have a picnic day use area or camp at, you know, an identified site, whether it's a state park site, you know, like in Kachemak Bay State Park, or some private property site. It might be a good neighbor site where people allow people to camp on their land, or it may be a private commercial site that somebody has a cabin or a lodge to rent or something like that. And so it's really just providing information to people that want to use the bay on where you can go ashore, either because you planned it or because of weather or something, an unplanned stop. But water trails have become a really popular concept around the country in the last 10 to 15 years. Originally started by the Maine Island Trail off the coast of Maine, and then has progressed across and around the country. So, we're just one of many at this point.
And what was the main thing that made you think this was a good idea or something that needed to be done?
Well, I mean,
because obviously people have been kayaking out there for quite a while.
Correct. You know, a couple of things. Personally, I've lived here in Homer, you know, for 30-plus years, and I have a skiff. And even, you know, up until last year, I would see a beach on the opposite side of the bay or someplace, and I wasn't sure if I could land there, if it was private property, you know, if it was in the state park or not, and so on. So that was one concern. I just was never certain without doing a lot of map research and talking to people and so on. So that was one of my main inspirations. But it was kind of roundabout in that initially I had wanted to do a hiking trail around Kachemak Bay from Anchor Point to Saldovia, you know, utilizing the beach on this side, on the north side of Kachemak Bay as much as possible and so on. But I realized, oh, that was going to be a really big project.
That's a bit too much, yeah. I don't think you could, that would be an unbelievable undertaking, yeah.
You know, but then, so then I thought it might be much easier to do a water trail. And I was familiar with the Maine Island Trail and a couple of other water trails around the country, and so thought, oh, that'd be good. I don't have to dig in the dirt, don't have to groom the snow, you know, we'll just, and so that's kind of, you know, the initial inspiration.
And you've done a lot of trail building and wintertime ski, been sort of a father of ski trails and stuff in Homer. You've been at this for quite a while.
Yeah, I've been, you know, seems like I've been doing trail work in one kind or another all my life, but it hasn't been quite that long, but almost. And yeah, I've been real active with the Nordic Ski Club here in Homer, and we have a real nice system of trails because we have so many volunteers that are willing to work hard to make it happen. And that's the same kind of effort I see going into the water trail. There's lots of people that are interested in going to work and see this thing progress.
Uh-huh. Let me turn to Marco Haggerty, who's got Marco's Water Taxi, which I think everybody who goes to Homer knows about because we see your boats zipping around. And you outfit people who want to get out kayaking on the bay. You don't just carry them from place to place, right?
Well, we mostly provide transportation. As far as outfitting, you know, we point them in the right direction if they're unfamiliar with the area, and we have kayak rentals. We don't provide tents or sleeping bags or anything, but we point people in the right direction. They tell us the kinds of activities that they're interested in. We try to put them on the right trail. And as far as land trails over there, there's over 80 miles of trails across the bay in the Kachemak Bay State Park, and there's something for everybody.
Yeah. So let's orient people who may not have spent that much time or any time on the bay. Homer is on the north side of the bay. Homer Spit sticks about 5 miles out into the bay, and then there's a small boat harbor. And you look to the south, and there's this amazing mountainscape that faces you on the water. And when you get over there, a lot of the land is state park with trails and campgrounds and a lot of good places for sea kayaking around. But you're far, far from the end of the road system. So you need somebody like Marco to take you over there in a small boat, or you need your own small boat. And then you can paddle around and have kind of an amazing wilderness experience. It's not that far away and it's not that expensive, but is away from the road system.
Yeah, that's right. The just the inertia of hitting the end of the road down there at on the end of the spit kind of compels people to get out on the water, cross the bay. It's not that far, you know, 3 miles to the nearest point of land, but we go 8 miles up into Tutka or maybe back towards Bear Cove, which is approximately 13 miles, and going over to Glacier Spit, which is one of the more popular hiking trails. It's about 8 miles over there, so it's not a long boat ride. It tends to be anywhere from 20 minutes to 30 minutes on a boat, and then you're in I wouldn't call it completely remote, but you get the sense of remoteness once you're over on the other side, and you feel like you're out in big Alaska.
Yeah, it is, and I bet it's more remote than the 99% of the folks coming from outside Alaska have experienced once they take one of those rides. Do you find that information has been a major issue or a major barrier? I mean, we're talking about the water trail, and that's largely an informational effort. And I know you deal with a lot of visitors who probably show up on the spit not knowing too much about what's going on. Maybe they just see your sign that says Kachemak Bay State Park and Water Taxi, and they just come in sort of saying, what's that?
Yeah, a lot of times I feel like I'm really, or at least my staff in the office is kind of on the front line of the initial introduction, so to speak, of Kachemak Bay. So we provide the information that people are looking for as far as the description of the bay and what it has to offer. And so just getting that information out is a large part of what we do. Sometimes it doesn't even have to have anything to do with some of our destinations, we give information about trails on this side of the bay. So we're very much involved with the state parks and all of the trails that it has to offer.
And how do you feel about this, the water trail, and having it be completed?
I think the water trail is a fantastic idea. I think it's an idea that has been a long time coming. There's some fantastic areas across the bay that you can almost avoid the bay if you know the right areas to portage across, and you can avoid some of the more I don't want to call it treacherous, but some of the water in the bay is more exposed than others, and if you can avoid some of that exposed area, then you're having a more pleasant paddle.
Mm-hmm. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about the new Kachemak Bay Water Trail. My guests are all three in Homer. And now I want to welcome Dorothy Melambianakis onto the show. She's with Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. What does the state park consist of, Dorothy? I mean, what are the sort of give us a little bit of the overview of what Kachemak Bay State Park is, and then what's good about it, what people should know.
Sure. Well, it's Alaska's first state park, and it's considered the gem of the state park system here in Alaska. It's almost 400,000 acres big, and it's consisted of mountains, glaciers, forests, beaches, rivers, and of course, trails and campsites. It's on both sides of Kachemak Bay. There's a few units on the north side that aren't quite road accessible, but they are closer to Homer. And then, of course, the larger expanse on the other side of Kachemak Bay is where most of the visitors go for kayaking and hiking and camping.
Mm-hmm. And there's cabins you can rent and yurts you can rent. So it's kind of an easy way to get out for a weekend or a week-long wilderness trip. And one of the things that I've liked about it when my kids were young is that you could sort of take any amount of stuff with you, right? You could get out to a remote spot, a campsite or a cabin, and you could just kind of load up the boat. You could even take a cooler full of drinks or something, unlike a situation where you'd have to backpack in or you'd have to carry stuff yourself.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of the yurts and cabins that are right on the shore, so being dropped off by a water taxi or taking your personal boats, you know, a great way. Or if you're in a kayak, definitely, you know, packing your own kayak and finding a place to camp right on the shore, whether it's a water trail site or a lodge or cabin. And then, of course, if you did want to backpack in, there's many trailheads that, you know, start right at the water, so you can still be dropped off and then have your adventure further inland.
Yeah. It seems like over the years there's been some patterns that have developed in terms of which trailheads are really heavily used, and then others are used very little. And at that Saddle Trailhead, which is just east of Halibut Cove, seems to be maybe the most popular. Is that just a factor of how long it takes to get there and how long the trails are, or what's causing the concentration of use in some of those particular spots?
Yeah, I think that one especially, the Saddle Trail that goes to the glacier, and then there's the other trail from the glacier out to Glacier Spit, is really popular because it can be a day trip. And so if there's visitors that are down in Homer and they just have a day and they want to, you know, go somewhere in the morning, be picked up that afternoon, it's a great, you know, way to see some pretty spectacular scenery with the glacier, some of the forest, definitely the beachy areas on Glacier Spit are pretty unique to kind of the Homer area and Kachemak Bay area. And so for someone that only has a day to get into the park and experience it, that's a great one-day trip in there. So that's probably most of the reason that one is so heavily used. And even though, but you know, locals, if people want to set off from there and spend a few days by the glacier or connect to another trail, that's also a good place to start.
Yeah, and it's a good because it's relatively easy boating in there. You don't have to worry quite as much about the tide or the exposure to waves as you do elsewhere. Although I suppose most people are probably using the water taxis to get there anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people get dropped off, especially if they're going to be, you know, dropped off at one location and sort of do the loop up to the glacier and then out the Saddle Trail picked up. It works great for a water taxi drop off and pick up.
Yeah, and Halibut Cove Lagoon is a super popular spot too, isn't it?
It is, because, you know, they have a dock there at the ranger station, and that trailhead leads to a lot of either backcountry type cabins and mountain climbing. There's, you know, a little trail up Chinaput Peak, as well as just some more moderate hiking and cabins and yurts along that way.
Mm-hmm. I actually did that Chinaput Peak climb last August, and I would say that calling it a trail may be a small exaggeration. It's more of a scramble in the upper part there.
Yeah, it gets kind of steep and slippery if it's been raining.
Yeah, really. And it's interesting also that, you know, that I think the state park folks, and you can weigh in on this, they seem to be concentrating on some of those more used trails and getting them into really superb condition, whereas some of the farther afield trails that aren't used as much have some of them have been not maintained and sort of allowed to overgrow a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely more trails to maintain than the volunteers that we sometimes have. Almost all of our trail workers are volunteers.
Is that right? I didn't
or
know
are
that.
Just on a stipend. So yeah, there's only a couple paid folks in that group, and I just met the new crew the other day, and so we have some really excited and great people that are going to be working on the trails this year. We have a Trails Day coming up on June 7th, and I think a couple of those projects are actually going to be opening up some of those trails that have been pretty overgrown the last few years. So we're hoping to open those up again, and then, you know, of course, keep the really popular ones in great shape too.
How do folks get involved if they want to volunteer? I mean, other than just sort of going out with a machete on your own, but to get involved with a crew and help out or come to Trails Day?
To come to Trails Day, they would sign up with us. We have our sign-up book at Howell Headquarters, which is down here in Homer on Ocean Drive. And in general, if they wanted to be involved in the state park sort of volunteer system, it would be contacting Alaska State Parks to get on with that.
All right. And we'll have links to all these different things we're talking about. You'll find them all at alaskapublic.org. Just look under today's show, Ketchumneck Bay Water Trail, and you can find the links to the state parks, the friends, to Marco's business, Marco's Water Taxi, and everything else we discussed. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about the Ketchumneck Bay Water Trail, which is a new thing that's about to get started. I suppose it really already exists because it's a little bit of a virtual thing, really, but it's going to be inaugurated shortly, and we're going to be learning more about that from our three guests, Dorothy Mellon-Bianakis, who you just heard from, who's with Friends of Ketchumneck Bay State Park, Marco Haggerty of Marco's Water Taxi, and Dave Brann, who is the kind of the father and co-chair of the steering committee for the water trail. All three of them are coming to us by phone from Homer. Dave, you're planning sort of this opening. What do you have planned for your opening, your inaugural event?
Yeah, coming up on June 6th, the day before Trails Day, we're having a ribbon-cutting ceremony on both ends of the trail, in Seldovia and in Homer. So in Seldovia, some of us will be going over by boat in the morning and be there from 12 to 2 for a ribbon-cutting ceremony and a boat splash and a taco feed and, you know, a few short comments by dignitaries and things like that to open that end of the trail. And then
What are you going to cut the ribbon on exactly?
Well, the time frame is, I'm not sure exactly, but maybe 1 o'clock. But the ribbon, one of our steering committee members has created a fanciful ribbon, and then we'll have a variety of the community members or local kids and so on all cut the ribbon, and it will be in the Homer, the Seldovia Harbor right there.
Oh, that
makes
sense.
There's a boat
ramp
right in Seldovia Harbor.
Of course, because it's a water trail, so it has to be next to the water. It makes perfect sense.
And so there's a trailhead there in Seldovia right in the harbor, and then the other trailhead is on the Homer Spit between the Pier 1 Theater and the fishing hole, and that back corner has been designated as the trailhead for the water trail on this side of the bay. And so when we come back from Seldovia from 5 to 8 on the 6th, we'll be having a ceremony here in Homer, and there will be some music on both sides. The Rubber Bootleggers, a local musical group from the Wooden Boat Society that sings sea shanties and so on, will be there. And we'll have a food cart, Le Truck will be there. And one of our sponsors is the Olson Mountain Water, so we don't have to deal with small water bottles and things. And we'll have a couple of kids' events. They'll be making small wooden boats. We'll be unveiling the big thing, I think, is unveiling and dedicating the trail. We'll be unveiling the plaque, which we got from the Department of Interior, the America's Great Outdoors Initiative, President Obama's initiative, identifying projects around the country. There were two in every state that were identified as America's Great Outdoor Initiative projects, and the water trail was one of those projects in Alaska. So that's kind of a big deal. And again, we'll have dignitaries from National Park Service, state parks, maybe from the state legislature, you know. All of that hasn't been totally confirmed yet, but yes, big doings, but basically fun, you know, food, music, cutting the ribbon, and boat splash.
And that's happening on the 6th.
That is correct.
So tell us about, like, where does the water trail start and where does it end? And what it's found along the way?
You know, well, it's interesting, going back to something you said earlier, the water trail, even though it's a designated route around the bay, it isn't a trail that's marked by buoys or trail signs. So people on the water can go any direction they want to go.
Right.
And people will do small portions of the water trail, you know, for a two-day or a three-day trip, or maybe want to do the whole thing from end to end. But basically, if you start at the Homer Spit by the fishing hole near the Pier 1 Theater, and you come up the spit, you know, a day-use area, Green Timbers, a day-use area, and the airport access road. And then up this side of the bay, the north side of the bay, and most of that's private property, so we're talking with local landowners and have just verbal agreements at this point.
Not a super easy place to go boating either with the mud flats and shallow water there.
Correct, you know, and the water trail, this is another thing, too, that the water trail is open to all boaters, you know, from small to big. Anybody that uses the bay now, whether it's in a kayak or a skiff or a rowboat or a sailboat or, you know, a water taxi or a bigger boat, the water trail is open for all of those people. We're trying to make the bay, you know, user-friendly, accessible as far as knowing where to go. So this side of the bay, the mudflats, really aren't going to attract very many people in sailboats, you know,
no,
or the larger boats because of the extensive mud flats. But this side of the bay is also very interesting if people, and if they have sites available every 5 miles or so to be able to get out and plan around the high tide so they can go ashore and then spend the night and leave on the next high tide or something like that. But
so you'll be able to look at a map of the water trail and say, well, this person has said, his little, because it's bluffs, and then there'll be little draws where there'll be a little flat area, which is mostly private property. But you'll be able to look at this and say, well, this person says it's okay to land. So, because I've always felt that, you know, you pull up there and you don't know if they really don't want you.
Right.
It feels uncomfortable.
That's the whole purpose of, we have right now identified like 42 water trail sites around the bay between the Spit and Seldovia. And over the time period, every one of those sites will have like a 4x4 post with a placard on it that says Ketchmack Bay Water Trail Site. And if people see that sign, they know that that's, you know, an approved site to go and camp. If they don't see that site, that sign, then they should need to do some homework on whether, because it might be private property or native property or something like that, you know. And so we're encouraging people to plan a trip utilizing water trail sites that we know, and we, you know, that it's okay for people to camp there or have a picnic there or something like that. So
that's great. And you're, I kind of interrupted, you're telling me the course of it, but so it goes around the north side of the bay, then all the way up to the Fox River at the head of the bay, and then back down.
It won't go up the Fox River. It goes across up the head of the bay,
mm-hmm,
to the what we most people know as the Switchback Trail.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an access point, and then across to Chagachick Island, and then from Chagachick Island.
So you're skipping that whole mudflat area up to Bradley Lake and stuff.
Yeah, because we're, you know, I mean, eventually one of the sites may be up at the Bradley Barge Basin, so
mm-hmm,
we could access the road going up to Bradley Lake, but that's not on our list of places right now. That was going to be a little bit problematic to figure out and to educate people about the tides and, you know,
hardly anybody goes up there. Yeah, it's a long way.
Correct, you know, and stuff. So then coming, you know, down the other side of the bay from Chagachick, you know, then there are state park sites in Mallard Bay, then on Glacier Spit, and then all the ones going in around Halibut Cove Lagoon, and back out down to Chinaput, up to the head of Chinaput, you know, and then on down through Eldridge Passage, Tutka and Sadie. And the state park actually ends down there by Tutka, the Jackaloff, before you get to Jackaloff Bay area. And then the sites from there will be, again, either private property or on some other state land that we have permission to identify a site, then on around into Seldovia. So, yeah, we, you know, just drawing a quick line, 125 miles plus or minus, but that all depends on how many islands you go around and how many nooks and crannies you explore and stuff. So, you know, you could easily add up to 300 miles if you really wanted to spend a lot of time exploring every inch of the shoreline.
And I'll bet that now that you've identified it, probably the majority of the use will be, you know, around Halibut Cove, around that area by Tutka and Sadie, the Herring Islands and so forth. But there will be some people who want to do the whole thing. Like there's some thru hikers on the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail. And that's going to become a new thing that people want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's kind of like the Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. We don't anticipate a flood of people, but we anticipate people being interested in coming from various parts of the country. There are almost water trail groupies now that go around and paddling different water trails all around the country. And I've already had, you know, inquiries from Maine and Florida and other places about this water trail. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there will be people utilizing the bay, but we are going to work really, really hard to educate people to utilize water trail sites, to respect private property, to be good stewards of the bay, to take care of watching wildlife, not to impact and harass the wildlife. You know, so all of those things will, you know, are a part of our vision and goals.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And we're going to talk a lot more about it in the second half of the show. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Kachemak Bay Water Trail. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guests are Dave Brand, who you just heard from. He's the co-chair of the steering committee for the water trail and sort of the mastermind behind it. Dorothy Melambianakis is the with the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, and Marco Hargody of Marco's Water Taxi, and also of the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, and lots of other activities. In the second half, we're going to talk about how you can set up a trip. You know, what does it take to put together your own kayaking, hiking trip in Kachemak Bay State Park and enjoy this amazing place we're talking about? And also, I want to talk about some of the conservation and planning issues that affect this critical habitat area, which is such a special place for everybody, and the stewardship of that. But first, we're going to take a quick break. In Homer, the Alaska Department of Natural Resources is revising the management plan for Kachemak Bay State and Wilderness Parks, and the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation is looking for feedback from the public. Representatives held an open house last week in Homer, and KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver brings us a story.
Dozens of people are milling around a conference room in the Islands and Ocean Visitor Center in Homer. There are large maps of the parks spread out on the tables. Each map is covered in little round stickers with comments like, allow heliskiing here, make trail longer, or no motorized vehicles in park. Chief Ranger Roger McCandless says that's the point of these sessions.
How do you see these local state park units? How do you want us to manage them, develop them for the next generation, you know, into the future?
The specificity, like, I would like to see a trail here, is extremely helpful because we can actually go out to that area and check it out, take some measurements and see if something is viable for there.
That's Shawana Gazinski.
I am a planner with DNR, so my main job right now is handling this management plan revision for Kachemak Bay State Park and State Wilderness Park.
The management plan currently in place for Kachemak Bay is from 1995. That was two decades ago, but it's the normal cycle for this type of park plan. Kaczynski says the goal now is to come up with a set of recommendations for the next 20 years.
This stage really helps us kind of focus our efforts and focus our analysis and research. It's a huge park. It's a lot of land. So for us to go out and look at every single acre is extremely difficult. So this helps us understand what's really important to the public.
The parks have about 85 miles of trails, 18 different trailheads, more than a dozen public use cabins and yurts, a tram, a dock, a ration, And the list goes on. It's hard to come up with a comprehensive plan for such an extensive area. And Chief Ranger McCandless says that's not the only challenge.
We basically have never had the funding to do what we need to do. In fact, I was just having that debate with one of our ex-board members of many years, a good friend of mine, is like, why do this if you don't have the money to do it? You don't have the money to maintain what you have now.
But McCandless says that doesn't mean the parks can't plan for the future. The parks now receive some federal funding to rebuild trails. They also rely on volunteers, some paid, some not, to do maintenance and staff the areas. He says he hopes public feedback will help make a stronger case for more state funding.
This is a public living document. So we should be able to go forth to the governor's office, to the legislature, and say, the people have spoken. This is the management plan. This is the direction they've given us. You know, again, can you help us?
The public can expect to see some changes in the next few years. McCandless says the state has already directed the parks to get creative and generate more revenue. One option is to raise user fees for things like cabins and camping. But McCandless says he doesn't think the philosophy of the park will change much, if at all. He says he thinks it will still maintain minimal development and that most of the differences between the old and new management plans will deal with use regulations, amenities, and trails. And that takes us back to the maps on the tables with all of the comment stickers. Shawana Gazinski says she'll go through all of the feedback.
The next steps from here is basically to summarize all of the data. So we'll have a written document. I'll summarize everything on the maps. We'll post all of that online. And then we actually run analysis through our GIS program. So we're going behind the scenes. We're going out, taking a lot of measurements, GPSing a lot of points.
Then she says her department will do viability studies to see what actually and realistically can be done to manage the parks for the next 20 years. Reporting in Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking today about Kachemak Bay, specifically the new Kachemak Bay Water Trail. And we have three guests with us from Homer. Dave Bran, who is the co-chair of the steering committee that's created this new virtual trail across the water. Dorothy Mellon-Bianakis is with the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. And Marco Haggerty is also with the Friends, but is also wearing his hat as the owner of Marco's Water Taxi, which carries people over to the state park and anywhere else they want to go on Kachemak Bay. And I wanted to talk about how folks can set up a trip. I guess a lot of our listeners have probably done it before, but maybe they've never made the leap beyond Homer Spit to the south side of the bay and sort of wondering what the procedure is for doing it. How do you hire a water taxi? How much does it cost? How do you get a sea kayak? You know, and what do you need to know? And so, Marco, if I get you to wear that hat for a minute, you take people wherever they want to go, and you help them with information. The water trail is obviously going to help with that. You'll have a website and information people can get, and we'll have all those sites linked to our site at alaskapublic.org. I assume they probably need to know kind of where they want to go, what they want to do, and to schedule a little bit in advance rather than just show up on Memorial Day weekend or 4th of July.
Well, first of all, we like to pride ourselves in our spontaneity, but boy, it sure helps if they plan ahead. that one of the great things about the water trail is that it's going to help dispense a lot of the information that we give out. So a lot of people will be, because of the water trail and because of the outreach that the water trail is causing, a lot of people will be coming into our office with a better sense of what the Bay has to offer. And that's going to be a great help for my staff and us as far as and my staff and other water taxis as far as lining people out with the activities that they're going to pursue while they're down here. The Bay is just full of opportunities. And so what they would do is they would call one of the operators. There's maybe five or six different water taxis down here. They would tell them, you know, how much time they want to spend, when they're going to be there, when they're going to be ready to go. It's important. You know, we get real busy, especially in the summertime. So it's, you know, it's really important, actually, to set a time.
You need to be there on time, and you need to be there when they come to pick you up, too. I'm sure that must be the most frustrating thing when you show up and people's tent is still up and all that.
Yeah, that's... when people are leaving, that's when the time is, people are a little bit more casual about the leaving time. But we've noticed in over the years that I've been doing it that people are always where they need to be for the pickup, I think.
I'm afraid they get stranded, yeah.
A little bit more concern on that end than there is when they're leaving. But we like to get our boats out on time because it keeps, you know, then we can maintain our schedule. And so... you know, and then there's parking issues out here on the spit. But you just make the call to the office, and the office will give you some options and tell you different places to go. And once all that's settled, then we get you in the book and the schedule, and away we go.
And you rent kayaks, do you rent them to just anybody? Or do you like to check for some experience level first? And how do you handle that whole issue with the not knowing if the folks know how to kayak before they rent?
Well, that is a tough one. You know, that's definitely a judgment call. I must say that I have a lot of respect for my customers and the people that want to cross the bay. They tend to be curious and energetic and athletic and so they come with a certain body of knowledge that's necessary for that. So we do ask them. We ask the people that want to go kayaking or want to rent kayaks if they have any cold water kayak experience. Short of that, if they've spent a lot of time in canoes or whitewater kayaking, that type of experience is helpful too. So we kind of ask them a few questions and get a sense of what their experience level is, and then we make a judgment call.
And if they're not up to it, I mean, there's some great companies in Homer that will take you out with a guide. I don't know if True North Kayak is still operating. I know they were in the past, and there's one in Seldovia too, I believe.
That's right. There's True North, there's Augustine, there's Seaside Adventures, and these people have been around a long time, really know the area, are very very good. They have a great crew of guides and you know, well trained, and we encourage people to take the guided trip. Sometimes, even if they have cold water experience, we encourage them to take a guided trip first, just so that they're more comfortable. And so that's the first place that we go if people are really adamant that they have that experience, and we will rent them kayaks.
Mm-hmm. So let's put some cost parameters around this in terms of, you know, you want to go down with a couple or maybe a family of four wants to do a sea kayaking trip, needs a ride across the bay and rent some kayaks, and presumably they have their own camping gear and stuff. How much did they sort of budget for in terms of the different parts of that?
Well, that's a good question. You know, a lot of the costs, you know, we try to keep our costs down, but with the cost of fuel going up and of course, state parks, I think they're talking now about increasing the the client fee going across, and every little bit starts to add up. But basically, a round trip to most destinations across Kachemak Bay State Park is about $80 per person, you know, for adults. That's a round trip. That means we come back and pick you up. And but that includes, you know, sales tax and the park fees and all the additional costs. That's just per person. Now, if you were going to rent a double kayak, I'd be looking at probably in the neighborhood of, with all the extra fees, probably around $220 for a double kayak will get you two round trips plus a double kayak for a 24-hour period. So you could camp out, spend the night, and come back the following day. And that's $220. I think that's a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. And then for $125, that would be a single kayak, one round trip, 24 hours with a kayak, and I think that's a pretty good deal too. So, you know, we'll get you to some just great camping spots, some really good hiking trails, and bring the kayak along. And
and you can always add some more days. The more days you add, the better bargain it is. And then the cabins, you have to rent them way in advance. We did a show on that, 6 months in advance for a lot of them. But those are around $50 a night if you can get one.
Well, that price, is going up a little bit.
Oh, is it?
So right now, the public use cabins, I believe they're at $65 a night. Although I think that's going to take a jump up to $75, and it may happen it'll probably happen next year because all those cabins have been rented out. The public use cabins in the state park are fully occupied for the summer. I mean,
wow,
fully
yeah.
reserved. It's amazing how fast they go. And for residents of Alaska, our advantage being resident is that we can reserve those cabins 7 months in advance. If you're outside, if you're not a non-resident, you can reserve them 6 months in advance. So it gives, you know, the residents of Alaska a little bit of an advantage. I really recommend that if you want to rent a cabin in Kachemak Bay, you get on it sometime. Well, let's see, 7 months in advance.
Yeah, we did our show in November because we figured that was when you needed to get on top of it for Memorial Day.
That's exactly right.
Are the yurts more available, or are they all sort of booked up?
They're more available, but they're starting to develop a following or a mm-hmm. reputation, or people are finding out about them. So they're starting to fill up early too. So it's a good idea to in the middle of the winter when you're hoping for summer to come around to start thinking about reserving those cabins.
Yeah. Marco Haggerty of Marco's Water Taxi. Dorothy Melambiniakis, does your group, the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, do you feel like there should be more cabins, more yurts, more development, or is there sort of a point where, the maintenance costs fall behind all this additional stuff? And then there's also a sense that we want it to be wilderness. We don't want to develop it too much. Where do you come down on all that when there's so much use and there's so much love for the park and maybe running into some limits on some of that?
Mm-hmm. One of our focuses recently has been in improving some of the areas that are already established. Just recently, we were over on Chugachik Island constructing a latrine and a camp fire ring, and we'll be putting in some tent platforms out there and picnic tables. So it's finding these areas that are starting to be used more and realizing that if too much use starts to happen, it could deteriorate pretty quickly. So we're trying to put some efforts and some of our funding and support behind improving those areas and getting them online. We do work really closely with Alaska State Parks, the park ranger and his staff, in identifying areas that might be good for developing in the future, whether it's with another, just a trailhead or a campsite or even a new cabin. But we don't have any of those, I don't think, on our horizon of what we're actively funding. The Chugachik project's been a couple of years coming, and so we're really happy that that one's moving along and getting complete and should be, you know, ready for increased traffic this summer.
Well, that's one of my favorite places. I don't want anybody to know about it. So.
The secret's about to be out.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, but fortunately for everybody else, because it is one of the most beautiful places in the Bay. So where do you get your money from? You're a private organization. You're doing projects. Where do you get the money to do all this work?
We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and so our money comes from, first of all, our members. We have membership levels, so people can join at different levels and pledge their support that way. We also just have general donations that people give us. We sell some merchandise like T-shirts and tote bags, maps of the park, and books, hiking guides for the park. We also get a few grants occasionally that fund either specific projects or general administration of the organization to allow us to do more things like events and fundraisers. The Trails Day event is actually a fundraiser for us, too. We get donated water taxi time from all the operators out on the spit, including Mako. So the money that we take in from that Trails Day definitely goes towards not only park improvements like Chugachik Island projects, but also paying stipends for some of the volunteer trail crew that work there all summer long.
One of the unique things about Kachemak Bay is the critical habitat area, and part of the rules for that have been to keep personal watercraft, otherwise known as jet skis, out of the bay. And they are allowed in Resurrection Bay and Prince William Sound, but not in Kachemak Bay. And I guess there's going to be some a revision of those state refuge plans coming up. How do you guys feel about the personal watercraft and sort of that's a sort of particular issue. Then the broader issue is all human use sort of interferes with wildlife to some degree. But how do you feel about that particular one, the jet skis?
Coming from the organization, you know, we don't really get involved in a lot of the political parts of the park management. A lot of that is handled by the Citizens Advisory Board, which does hear from the public and looks at the proposals, whether it's jet skis or helicopter, heliskiing use in the park. So they are the ones that really collect the public information and get the public sentiment and figure out how they will respond to that. We mostly stick to the enjoyment and sort of protection of the resources and responsible use and safe use of the resources, which is why us and the water trail just fit perfectly together to kind of promote those uses in the park.
Mm-hmm. Dave Brand, do you want to weigh in on jet skis?
The water trail steering committee decided early on that we weren't going to be an advocacy group, you know, in the political realm for or against any particular issue. Our goal was to make the bay accessible to people that use it. If in the future jet skis become legal on the bay, they would be welcome to use the water trail sites just like anybody else. If the jet skis aren't legal on the bay, then, you know, then that's a moot point. So personally, you know, people on the steering committee have strong feelings one way or another, you know, but as a group, we really haven't taken a position. Again, like Dorothy says, that's pretty much up to the Citizens Advisory Committee and, you know, for the state park group themselves to make those final decisions.
Well, what's your personal opinion? And Mako, you can weigh into it as well, because obviously it's a very hot issue. There are people who want to use jet skis on the bay, and there's a reason why there has been a prohibition against it. I guess people felt it interfered with wildlife. Have feelings changed? If people think it's okay now, or what are your personal feelings about it?
If you're asking me, I don't mind saying that I think there should be some places that that don't have jet skis. A lot of people that come down to visit the park here are coming to get away from the noise and the rabble of the city and are seeking a quiet experience. I don't think jet skis lend themselves to that. I think If they want to go jet skiing, there's other places. I think we should have one place that doesn't have jet skis. And part of the issue for me is that jet skis have a different behavior pattern on the water rather than traveling in straight lines like boats do. And I know boats interfere with wildlife too. I just think that if we can reduce the interference with the wildlife, then we're better off, and certainly the wildlife is. But jet skis tend to travel in a different pattern, and that pattern is hard to habituate to. So if a boat goes from point A to point B, you generally travel along a straight line and maintain a steady speed, and the wildlife is able to habituate to that. In fact, you know, a lot of times I'll be cruising across the bay and there'll be an otter with her pup, and she'll be just as relaxed as I go by. It's when I slow down or turn the boat that that stresses out that otter. And what we see with the jet skis is that's almost the purpose of being on a jet ski, is to make those turns and speed up and slow down and make the turns, and that really does interfere with the wildlife. Just absolutely cannot habituate to that, and I just see that there's no reason why we can't have one area that doesn't have jet skis. So I personally, and I'm not speaking for group, but speaking for myself, I'm opposed to having jet skis here, and I hope that that's reflected in this new management plan that we're putting together. I hope that people come out and support Kachemak Bay as a jet ski free zone. And
well, what's been happening? Has there been a significant debate on this recently down there in Homer? It hasn't really filtered back here to Anchorage, so I don't even know if it's been as hot as sort of people were anticipating.
Well, you know, we went through this a few years ago, and we went through it, got the critical habitat people to regulate this area to be jet ski free, and it was a battle. You know, there's strong feelings on both sides. But we were successful in making this area jet ski free, and I hate to see that. You know, it caused a lot of bad feelings from people who are generally friends. It's just that people feel strongly about this. I know I do, and I would really hate to see this become another, you know, to rear its ugly head again, because it's settled down, and I think people have, you know, accepted the fact that it's jet ski free. I'd like to keep it that way.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about Kachemak Bay and the new Kachemak Bay Water Trail. And my name is Charles Walforth. I've got three guests with me from Homer. We've got a few minutes left to talk a little bit more about the water trail and let people know what's going on that comes up. But I also wanted to talk a bit about the sort of the trend that there is a lot more use of the bay now than there was 10 or 20 years ago. And something like the water trail is really encouraging use, which is essentially non-consumptive. I mean, people aren't primarily going to be using the water trail to fish. They'll be using it more to explore. Are there any conservation issues related with increased tourism use of the bay? I'd just be interested in all of the panel's opinion. I was just thinking about Chugachik Island. You know, it's one of the main seal popping areas for Cook Inlet. And so, you know, I would guess there might be some impact from more people being around a seal popping activity. And I didn't know if that was something that you folks had thought about or tried to balance in your work and in where you're putting people or if there are any concerns about increasing usage. Dorothy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. One of the great things about the water trail, currently most of the identified sites are in the state park, and kind of what I see it doing is repackaging those sites that are already open for public use and recreation use, and also just providing that stewardship information, safety information, cultural awareness information along with that. So anyone that's finding out about these sites around Kachemak Bay and maybe has an intention to go and recreate in these areas are also getting the information about what's there, what's to protect, and ways to protect it. With Chugachik Island, too, you know, some of the reasons for consolidating that campground and improving it was to minimize the impact, because if more people are using it, whether it's by the water trail, through state park outreach, or just finding out about it, the more people there, the more there is going to be a need for, say, the latrine or a tent platform so that it doesn't damage areas of the island that don't need to be impacted in that way.
Sure.
That education and safety part is definitely one of the ways that the Water Trail is trying to package these areas.
Dave, could I weigh in on this?
Please do.
Since I've been operating a water taxi, we've seen the visitor rate go up tenfold in the park. And I think that you raise a real important question. How much is too much? And there can be too much. I think that one great thing about the Kachemak Bay and Kachemak Bay State Park is that you have to want to go there. And it's not on the beaten path. It's at the end of the road, and it's a place that's ideal for independent travelers and doesn't really lend itself to the
industrial tourism, as they say.
Right. And but even then, we see an increase in the visitor rate down here. One great thing about the Water Trail is that it is and I think Dorothy alluded to this, it spreads out that, it kind of spreads out the use so that you still get a sense that you're the only person out there. But I think you raise a real important point, and I think we need to be conscious of it, and because a greater visitation rate can sometimes take away from the quality of the experience, and that's something that I think we need to be conscious of.
And Dave, in just 30 seconds or so that we have left, where do folks find information about the Water Trail?
Okay, well, first of all, we do have a website, and probably the easiest thing is just to type in your search engine, just Kachemak Bay Water Trail, but you can also go to kbwtalaska.homeralaska.org. But the easiest is just to type in Kachemak Bay Water Trail. And then in Homer, we have areas like at the Chamber and at the various water taxis. We'll be handing out brochures and maps and things like that. But the best source of information, most complete source, is the Water Trail website.
All right. Well, thanks. This has been really interesting. It went by really rapidly. And I want to thank Dave Brand, you just heard from, who is with the Kachemak Bay Water Trail and one of the founders of that. Dorothy Melambianakis with Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, and Mac O'Haggerty with Macko's Water Taxi. And that's all for today, but I would ask you to join me next week. We're going to be talking about orienteering and wilderness navigation. Thanks for joining us on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Gokey. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.